Vayishlach opens with the long-awaited return of Yaakov and his confrontation with Esav. And as we know, it begins with a message from Yaakov through the agency of Malachim, which Rashi tells us, of course, are Malachim Mamash, just in case Esav is somewhat bellicose in his stance, so Yaakov doesn't want to risk any injury to any human being, he sends Malachim. And what's most interesting is, and we've discussed this in the past, Yaakov's message to Esav is twofold. It actually contains a certain dichotomy within it, which maybe we prefer to call a duality within it. In that, on the one hand, on a certain level, his words are without a doubt conciliatory in nature. He's looking to make the peace, for sure. On the other hand, and together with that, complementing that or supplementing that, there is a certain undertone of assertiveness on the part of Yaakov, and in a sense the two are necessary, because Esav needs to know that Yaakov's intentions are peaceful, his intentions are honorable, but, as is often the case in the Middle East, it should not be misinterpreted that if an overture towards peace is more or less a sign of the inability to wage war. And therefore, Yaakov also wishes to assure Esav that he is capable if necessary. He has the resources. And a classic example of that is to be found in Pasuk Hay, where it begins. Vayitzav Esav le'emor, he commands the messengers, Ko tomur la'adoni le'esav, say the following to Esav. Ko amar avdecha Yaakov. Thus says Yaakov, Im lovon garti. Those are the famous words, Im lovon garti va'echar ad ata. And amazingly, and this we've seen again in the past, Rashi gives two pirushim, but the two pirushim of Rashi are not like the normal, you could say this way, you could say this way. They really are almost antithetical to each other. But they bring out this duality within Yaakov's words. The first parish of Rashi, Garti. As soon as we hear the word Garti, we think of Ger, and Ger means a lightweight personality, someone who was never really fully accepted there. And that's Rashi's first parish. Garti. Lo nasesi sarvesh v'chashuv. It's important for us to realize it. Lahavdil, between the Lashon of the Chumash, Lashon of Tanakh, and modern Hebrew, some of these nuances are lost. Because nowadays, for example, if you would ask someone, Eifat Hagar, they would always say, describe where they live as Gar. It may represent their rental arrangement. But in pure terms, Garti always has a temporary connotation. Strictly speaking, if a person had bought the place, he would say, we would ask, Eifat Yoshev. But of course, that doesn't make any sense to us anymore. So we have to make sure that in the translation, so to speak, Ben Kodesh Lechol, between Lashon HaKodesh and modern Hebrew, as useful as it is, not to lose these nuances. Garti means, I never became an important person. Ela Ger, I was always a Ger. Why is Esav interested? Is he looking to commiserate with him? Eincha kedai lisno osi al bircha savicha. And therefore you shouldn't hate me over the brachas. Sheberchani, because you think that I stole your brachas. What was the bracha? Heve gevir la'achecha. The bracha was to become a gevir. I never became a gevir. Shehare lo niskaima bi. So the first, and that thus far Rashi's first perush. We see clearly that what Yaakov is saying is, let's be friends. No hard feelings, no harm done, I was only a ger. I think Rashi's second parish is better known. Dovar acher, garti begematria taryag. The alternative parish, that garti is represents taryag, kulamar. Im Lavan Harasha Garti, Betarig Mitzvah Shamarti, I was with Lavan, I kept the Tarig Mitzvahs, whatever that means for Yaakov to keep the Tarig Mitzvahs, Velolamadati Mimas of Haram, I didn't learn from him. Now this second Perush is of course unbelievable, because here's Yaakov telling Esav, I kept the mitzvahs. Does he think Esav is worried that maybe he let his standards go in Chutz Laaretz? Why is he telling him this? It's clear he's telling him because you need to know that should it come to a confrontation, my credentials are solid, Tarig Mitzvah Shamarti, I've been keeping what I need to be keeping, so do not open a confrontation with me. And this really represents the dual nature, the overtly conciliatory, but there is a subtext of, if it comes to business, I'll be ready. Now it's interesting, and by the way, the Meshech Chochma points out that one could say this duality is explicit in the Pasuk. For in the end of Pasuk Vav, it says, Vo'eshlecha lahagid laduni limtzochein be'einecha. Now, again, if we're sensitive to the connotations of these words, the word Haggadah, we know from Rashi and Parshas Yisro, Haggadah always has a harsh connotation. V'saged levnei Yisrael, kotomar lebeis Yaakov. For Beis Yaakov, there's an amira, a mild way of speaking. V'saged levnei Yisrael, but to bnei Yisrael, dvarim koshim kigidim, tough. If that's true, then in a sense, says Meshech Chochma, there is some type of tension between these two expressions. Lahagid ladoni means to talk tough. Limtzochein be'einecha means to appease you, says Meshech Chochma. That's it. Both of these strains exist within Yaakov's words. On the one hand, there is lahagid ladoni, should it be necessary. Together with that, there's limtzochein be'einecha. And with this background, with this orientation, let's take a look at the beginning of Pasuk Vav. I believe through the Meshech Chochma we will be able to look at it with new vision. But what does Yaakov say? Vayihili shor v'chamor. Okay. Yaakov begins to list his assets. Now, of course, shor v'chamor, it's in the singular, but it's a generic plural. Lahavdil, like we would say fish or we would say sheep. It can refer as much to the plural. And similarly, shor v'chamor, it's said in the singular, which is noteworthy, but al derech hapshat, one shor refers to many shor, one chamor refers to many chamor. What does Yaakov mean by listing his inventory to Esav? Once again, says Rashi, shor v'chamor is another message of peace to Esav. Abba Omar li, reading from Rashi, mital hashamayim umishmane haaretz. So Father blessed me from the dew of the heavens, from the fat of the earth, and here I am, and I made my success in livestock. Zo eina lo min hashamayim v'lo min haaretz. It's not exactly not from the top or not from the bottom, somewhere in between. And once again, here is Yaakov trying to reassure Esav that no harm befell Esav as a result of Yaakov taking the bracha. Somehow they did not really come through for Yaakov. That's it. What's interesting to inquire is, where do we see the aggressive side? Where do we see the assertive element that we're looking for now within these words of Vayihi li shor v'chamor? All we've seen through Rashi is the conciliatory. Don't be upset with me. I only had shor v'chamor. Where is this an assertive expression? So interestingly, the Medrash explains that shor v'chamor, in addition to being a generic reference to all of his animals, are a specific reference to two of his greatest assets, namely two of his children. Shor and chamor are a reference to two of the shvatim. The shor is Yosef, b'chor shor. The chamor is Yisachar, Yisachar chamor gorer. And therefore, this is the under-the-counter message to Esav, Ba'ili shor v'chamor, I have Yosef on my team, I have Yisachar on my team, so be careful that you don't start something that you may not be able to finish. But the Meshech Chochma says something quite stunning. And he begins with an interesting shaila. Pasuk Vav, listing his assets. Al derech hapshat, listing his assets. What does he have? Vayehi li, let's take a look. Shor, v'chamor, tzon. In terms of his livestock, you have the oxen, you have the donkeys, and you have tzon, the flock. Okay, something's missing. Namely, camels. Now, why do we say the camels are missing? Says Meshech Chochma, because if you look in Pasuk Ches, when Yaakov hears that Esav is coming with 400 men, so he starts to divide things up, and let's see how it's described. Pasuk Ches, Vayira Yaakov Ma'ot Vayetzelo, Vayachat Es Ha'am Asherito, he divides the Am, Ve'es Hatzon, Ve'es Habakar, Vahagmalim, L'shnei Machano. So all of a sudden, the Gmalim are a significant entity. If you're going to talk about three or four things that Yaakov owns, Gmalim are on the list. And that makes them all the more conspicuous in their absence when he talks to Esav, that he mentions Shor and Chamor, but there are no Gmalim. V'zeh Omer Darsheni. Says Meshech Chochma, we need to understand that what Yaakov is describing, as we have already been given to see, is not only a list of his financial and physical assets, but also he is describing his spiritual state. That's part of the Taryag Mitzvahs Shamarti. And let us begin at the beginning, literally at the beginning, because the Pasuk in Koheles tells us, it describes man as he originally was. It's a well-known Pasuk, Asher Asa HaElokim Es HaAdam Yashar. Once upon a time, originally a person, man, was created Yashar. Then the pasuk continues, "Vehema vikshu chishvonos rabim." But they sought many different chishvonos. But originally, the original state of man is yashar. And the question is, what does that mean? The Rambam in Parshas Hazinu and Reb Chaim Volozhin in the Nefesh HaChaim explain that when we say that man was yashar, it refers to the mystery of what was man's original makeup, and how could he ever come to sin? In other words, when we say that a person was originally yashar before he was corrupted by sin, if before he was corrupted by sin, how could he become corrupted? How could he be corruptible? The way the Pasuk describes it in Parshas Bereishis, any move towards evil comes from the outside. It's represented by the Nachash. He's the one who's cajoling and persuading and arguing. And in a sense, what that means is that although Adam has the property or the propensity to be swayed towards evil, but all things being equal, if it's only his own inclinations, he will pursue the correct path. That's how things were originally. Asher asar Elokim es Adam yashar. But that is not how things are like anymore. Because, and in fact, the way that the Gemara describes the Chet Eitz Hadas, it describes Adam and Chava as having been injected by the venom of the snake. And that's an exceedingly important image. Because if the snake represents evil, who initially came from the outside, but by the time the Chet was over, evil exists already on the inside of man. He can no longer categorically state that any move or drive or inclination that he has is necessarily a good one. Good and evil are now mixed up, and they continue to remain mixed up within man to his core. And in fact, as Reb Chaim Volozhin says, this is the understanding of the concept of the Eitz Hadas Tov V'ra. We refer to it as the tree of knowledge of Tov V'ra. Das refers to a connection. We always refer to what the Torah describes, the marriages and the unions between people. The Ha'odom Yoda es Chavo Ishto. Eitz Hadas Tov V'ra means, as a result of eating from that tree, Tov and Ra now became connected. They are inextricable one from the other. It's difficult to know which is one and which is the other. And that is the situation of man as he has left. However, there begins a reversal. It's fascinating to appreciate the contribution of the Avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They are literally looking to reverse the effects to some degree, right? The effects of the chait of Adam HaRishon. And the way that is done is by refining through their own self-perfection. They're looking to restore the original Yashar to a person. It's fascinating. Chumash Bereishis is referred to later on as Sefer HaYashar, actually, in the Navi Yehoshua, Halo Kosev B'Sefer HaYashar. That's Chumash Bereishis, according to the Gemara in Avodah Zarah and Daf Kaf Hei. And so it begins with Avram. And it's interesting that Baal HaTurim says, Vayita Eshel Be'er Sheva, the word Vayita is very rare. It only actually appears three times in the Chumash, the word Vayita. And the first one is in Gan Eden, Vayita Hashem Elokim Gan Be'eden. The third time is with Avram Avinu. Vayita Eshel Be'er Sheva, he is able to, in a sense, replant Gan Eden, that is to say, to bring a certain realm of life before the Chet back to the world. Interestingly, the middle case is Noach, Vayita Karim, which we've discussed on another occasion, who was also in his own way looking to bring the world back to the pre-Eitz Hadas state, except it didn't work out. But with Avram Avinu, it's a process that begins. And the way that the refinement is expressed is that actually, from within Avram's children, not all of them stay within the fold. Not all of them stay within the program. And in a sense, what that represents is that Yitzchak has siphoned away the positive from within Avram, and Yishmael represents the chaff. Ki v'yitzchak ikar l'chazara. The Torah says only Yitzchak is referred to in the pure sense as Zera Avram. The same is true for Yitzchak himself. He has two sons, and one of them is drawn away. And thus, we find that by the time Yaakov comes on the scene, Yaakov introduces a chiddush, and that is that none of his sons ever leave the fold. That is to say, none of his sons will naturally be sidelined. They will always have the status of Bnei Yisrael or Bnei Yaakov, and that is because fundamentally the process of refinement has finished with Yaakov. And now the fundamental nature of man has been restored, of Yashar, and it remains taken as Jewish identity from that point onwards. And we should know, as we do know, there are halachic ramifications for this this sense of identity. The famous statement of the Rambam is sourced in the Gemara in Kiddushin and Daf Nun. If a person, lo aleinu, is in a situation where he should be divorcing his wife and doesn't wish to, and he's holding out, now the halacha is it has to be meiratzon, right? It has to be in accordance with his will. But he doesn't want to. So, what's the way forward? Says the Gemara, Paskin by the Rambam, very simple. Beat him up until he says he wants. And there you have your Rotzon. Now, the Rambam, describing this, raises a question. Because, could it be that when he says, I want to give the get, he really, that's just his way of saying, I want you to stop beating me. I mean, if you would allow him to finish the sentence, that's probably what he would say. So how does this work? It says Rambam, and this is the Rambam in the Halachas, in the Mishnah Torah, Perik Beis of Gerish and Halacha Kaf. He wants to do the right thing. He's a Jew, he wants to do the right thing. His Yetzirah is getting in the way. You flatten out his Yetzirah, he'll be a good Jew in no time. That's the Halacha. In fact, there are even repercussions for the forced acceptance of the Torah, which is exactly the same thing. Now the Gemara treats it really it keeps it at arm's length. They're forced to receive the Torah. Perhaps that's not binding. How could it be? But the Mefarshim say, if they're forced to receive the Torah, it's no different than Kofenoso at Shiyama Rotsani. They're forced to say it. They're forced into it until they say they want, because they do want. And that's why when the nations of the world, which are described already in the Gemara, in Avodah Zarah and Daf Gimel, as complaining to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you never forced us to receive the Torah. You may have offered it to us, but it wasn't an offer that we couldn't refuse, and we all refused. But when it came to the Jewish people, they couldn't refuse. How come you treated them differently to us? Which is an interesting shaila. But the answer, says the Mefarshim, is because if they were forced into it, there would really be no meaning to their acceptance. It's contrived. It's artificial. Because they are not the benefactors of the legacy of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So if they don't want to do it, it has no meaning to say they do. But for the Jewish people, who are Bnei Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, if they are forced to do the right thing and they say yes, that is a resonance within their inner core. Says Meshech Chochma. As we know, every animal has two signs that mark it either as kosher or non-kosher, the split hooves and chewing the cud. But derech klal, the two go together. You're either completely kosher or completely not kosher, with four exceptions. Now those exceptions have one of the signs. Now they're not half kosher, they're completely not kosher, but they do have one kosher sign and one non-kosher sign. And one of them is the camel. And interestingly, the Bereishis Rabbah in Parshas Chayesara makes reference to the fact that throughout Chayesara there is it's a fascinating medrash. There is a very pronounced presence of camels. Eliezer brings the camels, and then they give the camels to drink, and then he brings the camels to Lavan's house. The camels are mentioned probably more than Yitzchak. And then Vatir Gavna ala Gmalim, then he brings them back. Vatir Polmi ala Gamal. I mean, they're all over the place. Why? Says the Medrash, because the state of affairs in Parshas Chayesara, things being what they are, Yitzchak and Rivka are like camels. The camel is a motif that basically sets the atmosphere for the marriage of Yitzchak and Rivka. Why? Because the refinement process has not been complete. They are like camels in that they contain something kosher and non-kosher, which ultimately will become Yaakov and Esav. Says Meshech Chochma, with all of this in mind, we understand that by the time Yaakov has developed into Yaakov Avinu, and he now comes to confront Esav, there is great significance with his opening volley of Vayehi Li Shor V'chamor, no camels, meaning I have now developed, this is the subliminal spiritual message, I have developed into Shor V'chamor, a Shor completely kosher, Chamor completely not kosher, within me the separation is complete, and of course it's left to Esav with a pencil and paper to work out exactly who's the Shor and who's the Chamor. So this is a fascinating insight of Meshech Chochma, Shor V'chamor, to see how it gives the coloring to the entire episode of Yaakov with Esav. Now, Yaakov hears in time that Esav is coming back. The Pasuk Zayin, Vayashuva ha-malochim el Yaakov lemor, they come back to Yaakov, they say, Bono lechich al Esav, we came to Esav, v'gam holech likroscha v'abamius ish imo. He's coming with 400 men. How does Yaakov react? Pasuk Ches, Vayira Yaakov ma'od vayetzelo, Yaakov is very afraid, ma'od, very afraid, vayetzelo, and he's very troubled, vayetzer, tsar, he suffers. And he begins to take action in the way that he does. He splits the camp into two, and etc. As we know, here a number of questions open up as to Yaakov's reaction. The first simple question is, okay, Esav is coming with 400 men. Doesn't look too good. Yaakov is afraid. Whatever happened to Bitochon? And here we are safely asking, whatever happened to Bitochon? Why be afraid? Happy Bitochon. Now the question is accentuated because the truth is we are not merely asking, have Bitochon like every Jew should have Bitochon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu specifically told Yaakov that he would protect him. Parshas Vayetze, he left home. V'hine anochi imach u'shmarticha b'chol asher teilech. He has received directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mouth a promise of protection. So now the question becomes crystallized somewhat. It's a little bit more difficult. What about the Haftacha? And the Gemara deals with this in its way, in Brachos Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. The truth is, it's worse than that. Because not only was Yaakov promised by HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he would look after him when he left Eretz Yisrael 20 years ago, But he was promised again just before he came back from Lavan's house. Shuv la'artzecha ulmoladecha ve'itiva imach. So set against this background of the general notion of bitachon, and specifically HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised him once when he left and again when he came back that he would look after him, it becomes now very problematic to understand his fear, vayira Yaakov ma'od. In addition, of course, just on a parshanut level, we cannot help but notice that his reaction is twofold. Vayira Yaakov ma'od, vayetzolo. Yira, we can appreciate, as much as we need to understand it, but that's the fear. Where is the tsar? What is contained within the vayetzolo, which is not already subsumed within vayira Yaakov ma'od? Why is it a separate reaction? I came across an understanding, an explanation of these psukim, which I found to be quite new. And it is in the drushes of Rav Chanoch HaKohen Ehrentroy. Now, you may be aware of the Avbezdin of London, Rav Ehrentroy. This is his grandfather, who was the Avbezdin in Munich. And he was one of the great rabbinical figures of Germany then in the 1800s. And he explains as follows. There was a selection of his drushes were collected in a work entitled Komitz HaMincha, a very slim volume. And he explains. He refers us to a medrash. And this medrash gives a very different perspective than what we're used to, I think. Because if we would describe the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach in our words, we're saying this is where Yaakov, he comes back home and he has to make the peace with Esav because he's back and there'll be trouble if he doesn't. So it is the inevitable confrontation that is precipitated by the beginning of Vayishlach. Says the Medrash, no. There are three separate opinions in the Medrash who say exactly the same idea. Each one comes from a different vantage point. But the Tzad HaShoveh Shebahem, what they all have in common is they understand that there was actually no necessity for Yaakov to meet with Esav, or to send him a message, or to make the peace with him, or anything of the sort. Because, in their assessment, Esav was himself already heading out to Seir. You see, that's where Yaakov sends his messengers, Arzo Seir. He's heading out to Seir. And if you don't trouble him, he won't trouble you. But once you send him a message, and any type of message, all of a sudden, thoughts will start to surface. And maybe he'll start to get ideas. Ideas that he would not have had if you never got in touch with him. That's a big chiddush. The Medrash adduces a pasuk in Mishlei, and sometimes the parable in Mishlei is difficult to understand. This one isn't. It's Perek Kaf Vav. Machazik be'ozne kelev over. If you take hold of the ears of a dog that is passing by and minding its own business. So that's the equivalent of mis'aber al riv lo lo. That's really the moshel for a person who gets involved in a machlokas that has nothing to do with him. You want to get involved. You think you'll make the peace. You think you'll make it better. Nothing would have happened. You can generate problems. You can exacerbate the issue, but whereas the dog will just walk by, but you pick him up by the ears and he gets other ideas. That's Esav, says the Medrash. Ledarko hayaholech. He was heading away from you, and you sent him a message, and then all of a sudden he has second thoughts. It's a chiddush. And this is quoted by the Ramban, and in fact the Ramban gives a fascinating further comment to this. Because the Ramban always sees within everything that's going on in Chumash Bereishis, Ma'aseh Simen Labonim, and says, Ramban, this happened to the Jewish people later on, with Esav, in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, when you had infighting between the various houses of Beis Chashmonai. When we celebrate Hanukkah, the original generation or two of the Chashmonaim were Tzadikim Gedolim. When they took over the throne, and their succeeding generations did not retain such high standards, and there began a civil war between them. And one of the sides went to enlist the help of Rome. And Rome was not involved, but then they got involved. Once they became involved, they weren't interested anymore in becoming uninvolved. Once they were brought in, they were there to stay. Says the Ramban, that's a kind of a simon labonim. Misaba riv lo lo, there's no need to involve them. And you think you'll make things better, they made things worse. What's very interesting is, and I have not yet seen this fully developed, but for the Ramban, if the timing, assuming there's a chronological synchronicity, if this episode of Yaakov reaching out to Esav corresponds to the Chashmonaim reaching out to Rome, of course the descendants of Esav, I wonder whether in the vision of the Ramban, the entire sojourn of Yaakov in between his two exits from Eretz Yisrael, the first one in Vayetze, the second one in Vayigash, represent the return of the Jewish people in between their two exits, that is to say, the tkufa of the Bayis Sheni, because Yaakov left, came back, and left again. And when he came back the final time, which is already the end of Vayechi, that represents the Gula Shlishis. So, if that is true, then we would need to look at the parshas of Vayishlach and Vayeshev with new eyes, because for the Ramban, they may well represent, as a generality, the tkufa of the second Beis HaMikdash. It would explain to us why the issue that dogged them throughout Vayeshev and Miketz was the issue of Sinas Chinam between Yosef and the brothers. That's the original splinter of Sinas Chinam is there, which was the cause for the Churban of the second Beis HaMikdash, as we know. That all took place in Eretz Yisrael. But that needs to be developed further.
Huh?
Two separate things, but involving Esav is the beginning of Vayishlach.
But this is not with Esav.
No. Says the Kometz HaMincha. Once he turns on the light, I think it becomes very clear. Our question is, you're afraid of Esav. Why are you afraid? Have bitachon. And more to the point, God promised you He'd protect you. So why are you afraid? Says the Kometz HaMincha, based on the Medrash, one can say very simply, even a promise for protection, shall we say, will help a person, protect a person, from things that would otherwise have happened to them. But they will not necessarily protect a person from danger that he brought on himself. A person does not have license. If he has avtocha, Hashem says, I'll protect you. So if you protect me, I can get myself into danger because Hashem said he'll protect me. If indeed what the Medrash is saying is that it was incorrect, of course we offer all of the disclaimers and all of the correct orientations, but on Yaakov's level, it was incorrect for him to initiate proceedings with Esav. So if the result is danger, in the final analysis, it is a danger that Yaakov brought on himself. And a promise to protect him does not necessarily cover that. And thus, says the Kometz HaMincha, Yaakov is afraid. And why is he afraid? Because as soon as he sent the messengers, or the truth is that we don't know exactly when this happened, but Yaakov realized very early on that he'd made a mistake to send to Esav. Perhaps when it backfired, if Esav really is coming with warlike intentions with his 400 men, Yaakov realizes that maybe I should have left him alone. Because he's Yaakov Avinu, as soon as he recognizes his mistake, he has to act accordingly. Number one, he is not secure, because who knows if his promise will extend to this. If he made a mistake, Vayira Yaakov Ma'od, he's afraid of Esav. He has to take action. And moreover, Vayetzer lo, where is the tsar? Where's the pain? The pain is over the mistake that he made. Vayetzela, I should not have initiated contact with him. I realized that. Yaakov realized it very early on and had to act accordingly. And even as much as he ultimately is successful, of course, but from a certain point of view, he limps away. He limps away from the confrontation with Sarshal Esav. Largely, his name is changed and he's been successful, but not without sustaining a certain amount of damage. That perhaps what the Medrash is suggesting is the Fila Mefarshim could have been avoided had he not set up communication with Esav. So this, for me, was a very new way of looking at the beginning of Vayishlach that we've seen so many times, based on the Medrash. Based on the Medrash.
Yeah, but it means that he wouldn't have got the name Yisrael, and he would not actually
got to it. It could be that he would have got it through more easier means, or maybe he wouldn't have needed it. And on the topic of Yaakov to Yisrael, let us take a look further in the Parsha Perek Lamed Hei, Pasuk Tes. This will be a better answer to that question. Vayera Elokim al Yaakov od bevo'omi Padan Aram vayivarech oso. Hashem appeared to Yaakov when he came from Padan Aram. Now he's back here in Eretz Yisrael. Vayom elo Elokim shimcha Yaakov lo yikarei shimcha od Yaakov ki im Yisrael yesh shemecha vayikra shimo Yisrael. In other words, Yaakov has his name changed to Yisrael twice in the Parsha. First by the Malach, secondly by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Perhaps what he would have missed out on, so to speak, is that the Malach of Esav didn't call him Yisrael, so be it. There's no evidence that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would not have called him Yisrael, which is, if one has to choose between the two, I think most of us would go with HaKadosh Baruch Hu here. It needs to be understood, al derech ha-parshanut, what were the implications of Sarah Shal Esav calling him Yisrael? Did that actually bring about a change within Yaakov? We're not aware that Esav's guardian angel has the license to start giving people new names and promoting them. Vayom elo Elokim. So now he's been called Yisrael. Vayom elo Elokim, ani kel shakai perei urevei. He's told yet he will have more children. Goy ukal goyim yem imeka. There will be nations and congregation of nations will be from you. Now, there is a most unusual comment of Rashi, again sourced in the Medrash. For Yaakov is told that from him will come goy ukal goyim, nations and congregation of nations. Now, the word goy means a nation. What type of nation? What's specifically what nation? It's non-denominational. Avram is told, ve'esecho legoy gadol. So we should be on guard. Our parlance, that we would use the term goy to refer to someone who's not Jewish, just because we have other words to refer to a person who is. But strictly speaking, goy means a nation, and Avram was told that he would be a goy gadol. And so too, Rashi's first explanation, goy ukal goyim, refer to the three shvatim yet to be born. How are there three shvatim yet to be born? Binyamin and Menashe and Ephraim. Binyamin is the first goy, is the first nation. And Kahal Goyim, the assembly, is that of Menashe and Ephraim. So far, so good. But then Rashi says something else, which is completely unexpected. Davar Acher. Another explanation is, She'asidim bonov lahakriv b'shas isur bomos kegoyim b'imei Eliyahu. Another explanation, on when it says that I will make you goy, says Rashi, in the non-Jewish sense. And what does that mean? Your descendants will be not Jewish? Says Rashi, no, but it refers to the fact that in the future, Eliyahu will offer korbanos like a goy, like a non-Jew. What is that a reference to? Eliyahu Bahar HaKarma? Whereby, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, it is also for a Jew to offer korbanos anywhere else. That's the Isur Bomos. And for the various reasons that a Navi is able to do, it's an institution which is called Hara'as Sha'ah, Elav Tishma'un. It's mutter, and indeed one needs to listen to a Navi if he tells you on a one-off basis everything apart from Avodah Zarah, if he tells you to deviate from the laws of the Torah. That's exactly what Eliyahu HaNavi did. It was an Isur Torah to offer a korban at Har HaKarmel. It was a Bama. The Beis HaMikdash was in existence. Eliyahu said to do it. He's a Navi. He's a Navi Muchzuk. And as we've mentioned earlier on, Rav Reuven Margolyer says That is why, as he's about to offer this test to the Nevi'e Habal, let's both have bring korbanos, and we'll see you wherever the fire comes down, it says, Vayibalos ha-mincha vayigash Eliyahu ha-novi. The Pasuk calls him a Novi that time. Now we know he's a Novi. He's been a Novi for a long, long time. But the Pasuk stresses he's a Novi because he's about to do something that he couldn't do if he wasn't a Novi. That's a wonderful Ha'ara al-Derech HaPshat. Of course, we need to understand, how does any of this help fit into what's being told to Yaakov? Why is this called the Yiddish Nachas for Yaakov? He's being told that one of your descendants will offer korbanos like a goy. How's that meant to make him feel better? What's that got to do with here? He's been given the unfolding of Jewish destiny, and you'll have Binyamin, Menashe, and Ephraim, and it will all be wonderful, and Eliyahu HaNavi will break the rules temporarily, like, and offer korbanos like a non-Jew. How does that fit into the scheme of things? Ma inyan har Carmel etzol Yaakov Avinu? That's the first question. The second question, which is also interesting, is, I mean, if we're divulging all the information, we should know, Eliyahu HaNavi was not the first person to offer korbanos outside the Beis HaMikdash as a Navi. Because if you know Sefer Shoftim, you will know that this was something that was also done by Gidon in his time, and the Mishkan was there. It makes a difference, Mishkan, in this respect. As long as the Mishkan is up, it is full Isser Bomos. And Manoach, the father of Shimshon, also offered a korban, as we know, it's Haftarah for Parshas Noso. And the Gemara talks about it openly. They were both Horas Shah. So that means that Eliyahu, in terms of, shall we say, his innovation as a Navi, to offer a korbanos on Bomos, he was not the first person to do that. He wasn't the first Navi to do that. He was the third Navi to do that. But apparently Manoach and Gidon don't get a mention here. So why does Eliyahu? Why is the offering of it on the Bomos of Eliyahu any different than any of those other Nevi'im, Manoach and Gidon? And the answer to all of this, which I think we really need someone who is an expert here to get us, to guide us, and we have so in the form of Rav Shlomo Fischer, Shlita of here Yerushalayim. And he really opens up the Rashi for us, and what he says is based on the Akedas Yitzhak. The Akedas Yitzhak, Rabbi Yitzhak Arama, one of the great late Rishonim, and in his Sefer, Akedas Yitzhak, he develops the following important yisod. We see here that HaKadosh Baruch Hu changes Yaakov's name to Yisrael. What's in that change? What is represented by the shift? It's clearly an upgrading. It's clearly a promotion. Something is better for him. What does it represent? As a generality, we know that the name of Yisrael is always represents a higher madrega than the name of Yaakov. Whenever he is at his best, whenever he's at his most alive, he's called Yisrael. As long as he thinks Yosef is dead, he's only called Yaakov. As soon as the year he's alive, he's back Yisrael again. It's true. As a generality, it's true. However, says the Akedah, something else is happening. Let's go back to Pasuk Yud Aleph, where he was told, Goy u'kahal goyim. We cannot help but notice there's a certain doubling over there. Goy, kahal goyim, Rashi related to it in his way. One is Binyamin, one's Menashe and Ephraim. But if we look in Unkelus, we will see that Unkelus translates Goy and Kahal Goyim as Am. Goy is Am, a nation. And then Kahal Goyim, the assembly of nations, is V'chinshas Shivtin. It's the assembly of Shvatim. That is to say, the unique configuration of the Jewish people as the assembly of 12 Shvatim, with each one contributing their unique strength and talents and personality, etc., that is Kahal Goyim. So Goy means a great nation, but specifically as made up of the 12 Shvatim. And indeed, this is the translation, in practical terms, of the shift from the name Yaakov to Yisrael. Now that you're called Yisrael, Yisrael is not a way of referring to the Jewish people. Yisrael is a way of referring to the Jewish people as made up of the 12 Shvatim specifically. And let us see this principle in action. There is a Medrash in Parshas Kisiso. At the time of the Egel, as we know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, at that time, that's what how things were projected to be. He said, Hanichali, right, leave me, right, v'yicharapi bahem, I'm going to destroy them, v'eseh usachol l'goy gadol. So he says to Moshe, I'll destroy the Jewish people and make you into a great nation. Now Moshe, of course, was a devoted leader, rejected the offer. But the way the Medrash describes it is, perhaps, says Medrash, says Omar Moshe, Im Kain, Kiyamta Bris Avos. You see, if you make a new nation out of me, you fulfill the Bris with the Avos, because I'm from all of the Avos. I'm from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, so their line can continue through me. Aval Ech Yekuyam Bris Shvatim. But what about the Bris of the Shvatim? I'm only from Levi. I'm only one of the 12 Shvatim. What about the other 11? That's Moshe's response. Hecha remiza. Where do we find such a thing alluded to in the pasuk? On the contrary, Moshe just says, "Remember the avos." But apparently, that's not the issue. Whenever the avos are referred to one after the other, as we know, they are always called Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Parshas Kisisa, when Moshe petitions on behalf of the Bnei Yisrael, he says, "Zachor LaAvraham LiYitzchak." Ule Yisrael Avadecha. It is the only time in the Chumash that they are called not Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. They're called Avram, Yitzhak, and Yisrael. And the reason why is because there's no point in asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to remember Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. He's remembering them. They'll continue through you, but Yisrael will not continue through Moshe, because Yisrael is Goy Ukahal Goyim, the assembly of the 12 Shvatim. And the truth of the matter is that this is all the more pronounced as we get closer to where we to where we wish to be. In the story of Eliyahu Bahar HaKarmel, it's in Melachim Aleph Perek Yud Ches, Haftarah for Parshas Pinchas, when it's not in the 3 weeks. And what does it say? As we know, he surrounded the Mizbeach with 12 stones. Right? What does the Pasuk say? Vayikach Eliyahu. This is Pasuk Lamed Aleph of Perek Yud Ches. Vayikach Eliyahu Shteim Esrei Avonim. He took 12 stones. Kemispar Shivtei Bnei Yaakov, which is the equivalent to the Shvatim of the sons of Yaakov, says the Pasuk, Asher Haya Devar Hashem Eilav Leimor Yisrael Yihyeh Shemecha. That's the Pasuk. Within the setting of Eliyahu Bahar HaKarmel, we're given a recap of Jewish history of Yaakov. What's the Pasuk saying? I think it's impossible to understand without the Akedah. It's saying he took 12 stones because it's 12 Shvatim from Yaakov. And remember, Hashem said Yaakov would be called Yisrael. What's that got to do with anything? Says the Akedah, it's got to do with everything. Because at the time of the confrontation between Eliyahu and the Nevi'i Habal, the question is there a future for the Jewish people? And the answer is, well, for some of them, yes. Because all the trouble was in the north. Achav and Izevel, Achav is Melech Yisrael. At the main time, you've got Big Tzadikim down south in the area of Yehuda. Yehuda, that's where the Kohanim are and the Levi'im and Binyamin, they're all okay. But in the north, right, Yosef and Ephraim, they're not okay. So the question is, well, will the Jewish people continue in some form or another? But Yisrael won't continue if they're jettisoned. And therefore, in a sense, the entire war between Eliyahu and Nevi'i Habal is in order to salvage and to reclaim the concept which is called Yisrael. And that is why he says, this is in Pasuk Lamed Vav, he offers a tefillah. Right? He offers, just before he puts the animal on the Mizbeach, he offers a tefillah that the fire should come down for him, of course. He says, Vayomer Hashem Elokei Avraham Yitzchak V'Yisrael. Please answer me, that the fire should come down. That parallels, of course, the tefillah of Moshe Rabbeinu, because it's a plea for all of the Yud Beishvatim. Kishetim Saloma. If we look into it a bit more thoroughly, we perhaps may be able to perceive the roots of this role of Eliyahu, in a sense, as the guardian of the entirety of Knesset Yisrael, from early on in his career. Before he was Eliyahu, he was Pinchas. Now, Pinchas went to war against whom? It says, of course, he killed Zimri. The pasuk says, "Vayamod Pinchas vayifalel." That's the pasuk in Tehillim, right? Vayifalel, which seems to be an expression of tefillah, right? Vayifalel, he davened, but of course, lefalel is an expression of din, and he argued legally against whom? Against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says the Gemara. He's putting himself out on all fronts. He's putting himself out against the Bnei Yisrael, he's killing Zimri, and he puts himself out against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because he pleaded on behalf of the Jewish people. And what did he say? So this is the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Pei Beis. See, Jewish people were dropping like flies, specifically from the tribe of Shimon. All those 84,000 all came from the tribe of Shimon. And now, Pinchas says, and that's his vayifalel, melamed she'asa plilus imkono. He brought a tik plili towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and says, al eile yiplu shevet echad mi Yisrael, an entire shevet will disappear because of what Zimri did. And the magefa stopped. Those 24,000, right? Vayu amesim b'magefa arbeim Yisrael. So what's fascinating is we can see that from the earliest time, from we first see him, Pinchas is what he'll do anything in his power, and he really gets involved in the cause of ensuring that you could never have a shevet like Shimon or any other shevet disappearing, and ultimately he becomes Eliyahu Hanavi and does the same thing. Bahar HaKarmel says. Rav Shlomo Fisher. Perhaps now we can understand the Rashi. What did Rashi say? Goy ukahal goyim iyemimekal. What does that mean? So Rashi in his final parish says, Goy means she'asidim bonav lahakriv b'shas isubomas kegoyim b'mei Eliyahu. In the days of Eliyahu, he'll offer korbanos like a goy. What's that got to do with anything? That was our first question. How is this good news for Yaakov? And moreover, Eliyahu wasn't the first person to do this. So how does this take its place within the Besorah Tova towards Yaakov? Says Shlomo Fisher, if we understand that what's happening on this occasion is Yaakov's name is being changed to Yisrael, that means that he is now being told that his descendants will be the unique configuration, the indispensable configuration of the Jewish people, as made up of Yud Beis Shvatim. And he is further told that one of his descendants will do anything possible in that vein to keep those Yud Beis Shvatim intact. The Korban of Eliyahu Hanavi, Bahar HaKarmel, is a sign of just how much will be overturned in order to keep the Havtacha of the shift from Yaakov to Yisrael, which is the father of the Yud Beis Shvatim. That is a wonderful biur in the Rashi. And the truth is that this will explain to us a Rashi in Parshas Bechukosai. Because there it says, Bezocharti es brisi Yaakov, Vafres brisi Avram, Vafres brisi Yitzchak, Vafres brisi Avram, Hezkor, etc. Now, Rashi there alerts us to the fact, if we watch carefully, we will notice that the word Yaakov there, the name Yaakov, Vezachartis Bisi Yaakov, is written Mole. That is to say, with a Vav. Now, Yaakov is never written with a Vav in the Torah, but here it is. And in fact, says Rashi, there are five places in Tanakh where the name Yaakov is written Mole with a Vav. And corresponding to those five places, the name Eliyahu is written Chaser, without a Vav. So it's actually written as Eliyah. That's how it's pronounced. Says Rashi, quoting the Medrash, Yaakov took the vav from Eliyahu as a pikadon, as a pledge. You want the vav back, make sure that you come to be mevaseh the geula for my children. Now, the Gur Aryeh says in Parshas B'chukosai an amazing thing, because it turns out that there are five occasions where this happens. Why five? And it seems to be a very specific number. Not once, so it has to be more than once. But if you're Talmudic minded, you would say maybe three is a chazaka or ten is a minyan. I don't know what you'd say. But it's dafka five, says the Maharal. The letter vav that's taken, see, how do you exact a pledge from a person? How do you express an irreversible commitment to do something? You give a person your hand. Tkiyas kaf. The five vavs that Yaakov took from Eliyahu are the five fingers from Eliyahu. It's a tkiyas kaf. Shake on it. So says the Gur Aryeh. And what's very interesting is, and this is pointed out by later Mefarshim, the configuration or the placement of the five vavs, one of them is distinct from the other because it's in the Chumash, and the others are in the Nevi'im. Those are the five vavs. One's the thumb, and one's the four fingers. And then now they shake. Says the Shlomo Fischer, is Yaakov Avinu the only person who's interested in the Geula? He's the only person who took a vav from Eliyahu. They should have been plundering Eliyahu's name from the beginning. Avram should take something, Yitzhak should take something. Why is Yaakov the only one who's taking a letter from Eliyahu's name? But the answer is because what Yaakov wants from Eliyahu is something that none of the others had. In other words, when Avram and Yitzchak, what they had, Ve'esachala Goy Gadol, but there was no emphasis on this final level of the Yud Beis Shvatim that was specifically given to Yaakov, and that's the quality that Eliyahu will go for that. So Avram and Yitzchak, so to speak, on their level, if Eliyahu doesn't bring the Gula, somebody else will. But he won't bring it in a Yaakov Avinu dick away. Because Yaakov needs to be Yisrael, that's all the Shvatim, and that is Eliyahu Hanavi's area of expertise. And that's why Yaakov takes a vav. Be sure that you're the one to bring the Geula, because you'll bring all of them back. So this is truly a wonderful biur, and it gives light to a Rashi that otherwise, how could we understand Eliyahu Hanavi, he's offering korbanos, and that's the biur. And that's a good night's work for this evening. We'll leave it over there.
Do you have a minion?